You're listening to The Ecopreneur Show, a podcast that inspires entrepreneurs and creatives on how they can make a positive and meaningful impact in the world. I'm your host, Vanina. Every other week, I hang out with entrepreneurs, business owners, and leaders that are creating real-life solutions for a more sustainable future. I feel by having raw conversations with ecopreneurs that I'll keep on inspiring us to take action in our own lives. Thanks for tuning in. So Isaias, thank you so much for being on the show. I am so honored that you're here because I feel like just from your work, you've done such an amazing job of making sustainable education so accessible for everybody. And I feel like you make very complex ideas into ways that anybody can understand. And you're so approachable and positive. And I really want to just dive into, how did you decide to make this your mission and your work, and a little bit about your personal story?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Thank you so much again for having me. And so I guess, you know, for me, a little bit of a background about me is that I grew up here in Los Angeles, California, formerly known as Tongvilan. And so, you know, for me, growing up as a low-income, first generation from an immigrant family, my parents had immigrated from Mexico in the 1980s. And so just really understanding my own position and like direction in life was that the fact that, like, you know, I didn't really know much about environmentalism. I just knew very simple things. And so I guess like my story started off, as living in a low income subsidized housing is obviously more prone to live near environmental injustices. And so I think for me, what really shaped my influence is that I kind of saw, you know, zero waste, or what you would say recycling, as a form of survival for me, because growing up for me, like, I helped my mom collect cans and stuff all over the neighborhood. And so we would recycle it down the street near my neighborhood. And so I think for me, like, I saw it as a form of like survival, you know, reusing things and just being like environmentally, like just like resourceful, it would be called. And so I think it wasn't until we would go in parks on the weekends with my brother, sister, and my family that we would like enjoy the time with like the greenery out there. And it just felt so fun to be outside. And so as I was in school, I realized that like a lot of the educators I had in my life were very, I would want to say like terrible. They suppressed students' creativity. They looked down upon students and they had very savior complexes. And so I honestly like questioned myself of like how I was able to really navigate that, especially realizing that my own identity and values were so much different than a lot of the students in that classroom. And so I think that it wasn't until like late elementary that I started learning more about conservation. And so it was really awesome. Like, you know, you hear about the basic elementary things about like gardening and like, you know, global warming, and you just like save the fishes, do beach cleanups. And so that was really awesome to be experienced and immersed in those experiences. But the one thing I felt is that a lot of the times the people teaching it, or the events I would go to with my family or participate in through school, none of the people or educators looked like me. And so I wondered like why that was the case. And so obviously as I got more into high school, like there's conversations of like, where are you going for college? Like, what do you want to do? Where are you applying to?
Totally.
And so I was so confused of like what I really wanted to do. And I told myself like, okay, I was never really the smartest student. I struggled a lot in my classes. And so I was like, okay, I don't really know what I want to do. And so I looked into my own values and I thought, okay, environmentalism would be cool. Like, I was like, earth studies, environmental studies, like that's so awesome. And so I applied to Berkeley and I got in. And so when I got in for environmental science, I was like so excited. I was like, this is the first step for me really to become an environmentalist. And so I think as I was in like the immersed in academia, I then realized in college like how much elitism is perpetuated to the fact of like it's very presented through a cis heteronormative lens and it's very white environmentalism focused. So when I mean that like a lot of the frameworks or like ideologies that we learn in environmental science is like through the lens of white men. And so I asked myself, like, why aren't other Black, Indigenous people of color cultures or environmental values talked about in these courses? And so it just seemed to me that, like, again, it was the same picture I saw when I was little. It was more focused. And so learning that language really allowed me then to really personalize what those terms really meant to me, because I didn't personally know what environmental racism was defined as, right? But I knew what it was in the sense of, like, how it felt to be living in a community that's disproportionately being affected by environmental racism. And so it really angered me to see the fact that, like, even in educational spaces in a college, like, they were not representative of my own identity, and the professors were all white. And so even, like, in the environmental justice courses and learning about environmental racism, it was taught by a white man. And so it's just, like, to me, I was like, how am I supposed to really navigate this when the school is just reinforcing these ideas? And so I then, you know, took the time to really unlearn the fact that, like, going to college, essentially, like, it's not going to make you a better environmentalist. And the best environmentalists, in my opinion, have always been those that come from traditional ancestral knowledge. And so that's when I started realizing that that should be at the forefront of environmental education, because you don't necessarily need a degree to call yourself an environmentalist. And so I had, like, lied to myself in a sense the 4 years during college of, like, thinking that if I had gotten a degree, done research in all these spaces and do all this, then that I would be seen as more of an environmentalist. And it was actually the opposite, where what it's like constantly my work was being doubted to, like, my own ethics, to, like, my own identity, the fact that you're entering a space with white researchers that none of them look like you, and you're just like, okay, well, this is, like, obviously so uncomfortable for me to have to continuously, I'm talking about environmental justice and racism, and they're just solely focusing on conservation as if environmental racism isn't real. And so that was something that really passionate. And so I guess, like, that kind of stemmed from me working on a previous project. I was working with my co-creator of an environmental magazine. And so a year later, when we produced our issue one, I decided to step down and really focus more on my own educational side, and told myself, like, I have so much knowledge in the sense of my own brain. Why aren't I using it after my degree, right? Like, the job I was working on was at a creative agency. And so that wasn't obviously environmentally focused. And so I told myself, okay, like, let's create something that's very visual for myself to, like, record and know, and to the fact that, like, I can practice my writing and research skills again, because that's something that I really wanted to improve on. And so I started doing it, and then I think I incorporated the vegan and queer identity because of my own personal strong connection to those two labels, I would say. Now, like, you know, Queer Bound Vegan essentially continues to grow till this day, and I'm very thankful for that, but also wanting people to really understand that this is, like, level one, like, environmentalism.
Right. And so when you left your position and decided to start Queer Brand Vegan and kind of create in some ways your own curriculum, and of course you had all this knowledge, how did you start in some ways creating this sort of curriculum for yourself in a way that you felt was a way for to be an educator? Because I feel like, you know, with school, they have a very set way, but you kind of created your own curriculum. So how did you kind of, and how do you currently still go about that?
Yeah, definitely. I think it comes part of it from my creative side, from design, in the sense of, like, the way that I was taught in my jobs and past internships of, like, how design and creativity works. And so for me, I always thought about, you know, when any company, I think that designing product or some whatever you're working in or designing, is that you need things to flow. And so a lot of the times I saw in academic that a lot of the things we learn, everything was very obviously singular variable. Nothing was very multivariable in the sense of, like, barely they were making interconnections to all these subjects that we were learning. It was more like, oh, these are just your prereqs after you're done, like, you get your degree. And it's like, I don't like, you know, organic chemistry or physics. But then I realized later on, like, how that all interconnected in the larger picture. And so, you know, I think for me, like, the way I wanted to design it is the way of how I would want to teach myself. And so had I, you know, actually was in a very positive educational learning environment, I think that the way I designed it first is, like, color coding was something that was really important to my educational journey, is the fact that, like, I'm a very visual learner. And so when I use colors, it, like, helps me really solidify that information, and it helps my brain engage in that creative process of, like, making it look fun And so obviously, you know, when you're kind of swamped with all these book readers from academics and they're like all in black and white terms, you're just like, this is just too much. How do I really solidify it? And so I told myself, okay, well, had I actually like someone told me like 2 to 3 sentences, you solidify things, then like I would have been so much happier about how I learned about things. And so I did it one by one in the sense of painting out a picture of where my environmentalism started and where I identified very closely with the terms. And so I think that's the way kind of I wanted to plan it out. But I think that too, the deeper that the content started producing more terms, that I would hope that the people who had joined me during that time in my community and was cultivating them, is that they continue to grow their knowledge. So each term would kind of work upon each other or build upon each other, I should say. So it was more about, if you wanted to know more about environmental racism, you needed to understand the environmental justice movement. And so kind of like making those interconnections within the post would help me flow. And so now like it's more of like it incorporates more experiences of like theoretical or like concepts. And so it's gotten more deeper, I would say, the work that I've been doing. And so now people are more willing to like learn more because they had never really thought about these terms or slash what those terms really meant in a larger, deeper picture. And so now we're kind of digging deeper into these fields and wanting to really people to engage more and use their previous knowledge, wherever they learned it from, about how they can apply it into their work.
Yeah. And how do you, because I feel like, you know, you always, when from an observer of your Instagram and your education, I feel like you're very responsive to your audience. Do you in some ways decide a sort of subject to really dive deep and then in some ways simplify and really help your audience? Or do you have like a set sort of idea of your topic from like, let's say like 6 months out? Or do you feel like you respond to your audience that's asking, you know, how do I learn about this? How do you kind of balance the two?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think for me, like people always ask me like, how do you have so many terms? And so yeah. I think for me, like I actually like, because I kept all my readers from college and a lot of my notes, is the fact that I was able to really keep and like store a lot of those terms, and I saved them on my document. And so I have a list of them. And so a majority of them have been used, of course, because I've already talked about them. But I am also someone that's constantly looking for ways to produce new content or slash talk about new topics. And so sometimes it comes out of the blue where I'm like thinking about things and I was like, wait, why isn't this like mainly talked about more? And so there's some things that, of course, like it's not that I'm like the one that has never the one that created it, but there's barely any conversation sometimes being made of certain topics. And so why isn't this being resurfaced? Is it because people are afraid? Is it because people don't really have the language to talk about it? And so I go for it. But I think that like with community needs or my community is sometimes understanding that, yes, this is a safe space learning environment, I would say sometimes, but also too, like, I am someone that's not always the one to provide the answers, right? And I tell people this, the fact that, like, your own emotions and feelings should be also at the forefront, not my own thoughts, right? And so I think that, too, I encourage people to do more research into things. I think that as a, you know, someone who obviously is always citing their resources, though, if someone has particular questions about that research, I usually pull it up in my documents and like reference the highlighted notes that I took. And so obviously, like, to providing that type of resource. And so I think that like, it's sometimes like a little bit difficult with community needs, obviously, like my own needs, because I obviously tell them that I have to prioritize myself first. And so with sometimes I can't really answer those questions, not because I don't want to, or two, it's because I don't really necessarily have much information about it. And so I told them, like, obviously, like, if you want to learn more, like, you know, feel free to send me articles, but that's something that, like, I obviously, like, you know, would want to add to continue learning, but I just don't have the time right now to add it.
You do such a good job on your platform to show that you are an expert in your field, but also you're very transparent that you don't know everything and that this isn't the first time that someone has cited this. And I think you're very transparent about that. And so I kind of want to kind of segue into, everything is interconnected. And as somebody who comes from a design, sustainable design perspective, we're going to make mistakes, even if we think that we have the best intentions possible. And there's going to be times where somebody may call you out on something and you might think, wow, I actually didn't observe that the first time, or I didn't actually know that that was going to have unintended consequences. So as somebody who's really good at creating sort of a safe and honest space, what is your advice for somebody who is an ecopreneur who may be in some ways kind of afraid to say anything for, you know, maybe because a year down the road, they might realize that what they said before has unintended consequences. How do we create honest conversations and safe spaces to kind of show that we're human and that, you know, we're doing the best that we can, but we're going to make mistakes along the way because that's just the part of being all interconnected in sustainability?
Yeah, I honestly think it comes from like the fact that like you have to admit where you're coming from, right? So I think that a lot of the times people are like, not wanting to really acknowledge their mistakes. And I'm someone that has always told this too from people of like, I thought about academics being the one to call yourself an environmentalist, right? And so that comes from privilege of myself attending that institution. And so that's something I had to admit and unlearn during that time. It's not something that you should, of course, shame yourself for, but also acknowledging that if you have done harm, what have you done to not necessarily like fix yourself or address the issue, but like how have you been able to learn from that individual or community that has called you in or have takeouts on that? And so I think the very simple things of people like correcting you or like saying things, oh, well, this is how it's defined, or oh, usually in this case, it's defined this way. And so it's acknowledging too, as an ecopreneur or whatever type of field you want to do, is that you shouldn't hold yourself to a pedestal, but you should hold yourself at a community level. Thinking of things as circularity in the sense of I'm in the same table, the same round table as everyone else, right? Discussing these topics. And so I do think though, if you're going to be producing things, yes, do your research on it. Look into resources that you may think that fit, but also to acknowledge the fact that not always you're going to be right. And so that's something that like I've told people that like I don't want anyone ever to put me on a pedestal or have my thoughts or anything high regarded, but more about like this is more of a tool foundation for you maybe to create your own terminology or your own thoughts of the definitions. And so I think having that shame and guilt is good for sure, because it makes you think about these things. But too, like if you continue to spiral down in that journey of like shaming yourself, then you won't be able to move forward because you're just constantly thinking about what people think about you instead of too, like the work that you're doing out there.
Right. I love that. So what for you is your definition of climate and environmental justice?
Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like it's so hard since there's so many good definitions out there, but I think that like, you know, if I like kind of try summarizing my own thoughts plus using own resources that I've like obviously cited before, is that I think environmental justice looks into the harm and the damage done by environmental colonialism that sees the institutions that have done damage towards Black, Indigenous, people of color communities in the U.S. and throughout the world. And so environmental justice obviously looks into advocating for the people's right, and so that the community is able to really build regenerative practices around them that is obviously fits their own economic needs, their social needs, and like much more right culture needs. And so I think that's something that like I strive for, environmental justice. I think climate justice obviously is that interconnected movement with, you know, social, environmental, that advocates for, you know, the rights for, you know, mainly focused for frontline communities that are already experiencing the devastating effects of the climate crisis. I think it's known as like climate violence. I don't know if it's coined yet. I'm pretty sure it's coined, but, you know, they, you know, essentially are fighting for people who have experienced climate violence already. And so I think climate justice kind of pushes that like more not for that rush, but more about that emphasis of like, you know, the environment is harming people already and the planet and ecosystems and animals. And so I think, you know, climate justice looks more holistically at everything, but I believe that like both go hand in hand.
Yeah. And so for an ecopreneur who, let's say, you know, really does, because the climate justice movement is so strong and prominent, in some ways wants to support this for, you know, not just as a trend, but something for the long term. But let's say that this is not their main focus, but they want to show that they're supporting this movement. What is your advice on how they can take action and move forward from here?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that if you're entering this space, environmental spaces, for whatever purpose you may have, just know that, like, if you're an environmentalist, usually you're serving the people, you're serving the community, you're serving the ecosystems. And so if you're coming with the intentionality or positionality to be like, I want to become someone big in this space, I want money, not to say, like, you know, just shame someone for trying to make, you know, profit or like wealth for their own interests in that sense, but more about, like, you know, if it's going to be exploitative, and like, then I do think that, like, it should be thought about of, like, intentionality and positionality of what you're wanting to do. And so I think that will then showcase itself or manifest in the future, where people are going to be like, you're just another someone who, like, will be using these terms, not really make those interconnections, and just, like, kind of spew it out and make it seem like you care, but we all know that you don't. And so I do believe, though, that, like, if you're into this work, environmental work, then, like, ask yourself, like, how else are you redirecting your energy, decentering yourself from a lot of conversations of how you're spreading that wealth or, like, knowledge or, like, amplification to others. And so I think it's something that you, like, would need to consider yourself and, like, ask yourself, like, what is it that you really want to do? Because I think a lot of the times people are, like, message me and they're like, I want to become an ethical influencer. I want to, like, grow my following. And I, like, concerned of, like, are you doing this for, like, brand opportunities? Or are you just doing it because it's trendy now? So just understanding that there is a wave of individuals that would have those intentions and not really, like, really focus on, like, talking about these things, or just, like, will be posting once about it and being like, okay, I did my job. I know what environmental justice is, you know?
Agree. I think that, you know, there's a saying of, you're only thinking about yourself, you can only go so far. But if you're thinking about a place of serving and helping others in your community, I feel like the people, including yourself, you know, in a place of service and education, I feel like that's when you really build a community, right?
Mm-hmm,
and, you know, people are actually coming it from a place of, you know, like, I want to help you, not how do you help me?
Exactly. It's more about, like, how not to have the savior complex of, like, I'm saving this community, but more about, like, I am serving and working along with this community to also learn, but also hold myself accountable, but also be a supporter for them to be at the forefront of these conversations. And so that's something that, like, obviously to myself, that, like, I'm constantly using my platform to have more longer everlasting conversations about, you know, indigenous rights, like, indigenous campaigns, and just incorporating more of that into my own work.
Yeah, I think, you know, of course, there's an importance of, because we do dive so much, and you dive so much time to be an educator, but also in some ways, I know that your work is also supposed to be very inclusive and accessible. Do you find this tricky balance of also in some ways being able to support yourself and make a living out of the work and the time that you do, but also equally have this sort of accessibility to it?
Yeah, I do. Sometimes I do. I feel I'm lucky to, like, I have gotten, like, a full-time job offer, but, you know, working part-time had really helped me. And so I think that, like, you know, right now is my career. I'm still building my career. And so obviously, like, a full-time role for me is more economic for me to also think about my family, because I think that, like, a lot of the times, you know, I've told some people, my friends on the platform, is that, like, necessarily, like, out of college, like, I had to think about my own parents' retirement plans, because they don't have retirement plans. They don't have access to healthcare. And so that's something that, like, obviously, like, you know, I have to constantly already think about at, you know, at the age of 21, I was already thinking about this. And so obviously, like, you know, when people are telling me live your life, it's so hard to really, like, you know, disengage and be like, oh, well, my family's over there and, like, they're doing their own thing, when it's more like, how do I, like, create savings for them too while I'm also building this? And so I do think that, like, I have had to take in some brand partnerships in order to, like, you know, not self-sustain myself, but also to provide myself some sorts of income, for extra income for savings. And so, you know, even that income, I use it, I redistribute it in different ways, whether it be through friends, like paying for their dinner, or, like, you know, donating. And so it's like, you know, spreading your wealth. It's not really hoarding. But I think, you know, the larger picture is that, like, not, it's not always going to sit right with some people, which is fine. But at the same time, if the person's going to focus or criticize the individual for having a brand opportunity, or sponsorship over the fact that, like, the larger picture of the brand may not be, you know, sustainable, then, like, it does bring concern. But I think that, like, yeah, of course, like, my own ethics too, like, I can't work with a lot of brands, because one is that, like, I'm vegan, so a lot of the brands are, like, that are, like, you know, environmentally focused, that are made out of wool, like, I can't work with them, because I don't believe in, like, myself in using animal-based products. But, you know, and so that's something that, like, of course, like, I'm not, like, mad about. But I think too, it's like recognizing too, like, there will be times that I have to do that. But I think more of my funds will be hopefully coming in the future with public speaking instead of, like, influencer partnerships.
I think you have a set criteria of who you partner with, and who, especially when you are an educator and stuff like that too, it's important to lead by example and be a part of your true values. So how do you hope, for your work, like, what do you envision for your career in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, like, you know, I don't ever want to create a company. Honestly, working at a startup the last 2 years at a creative agency, it was a whirlwind of feelings. Just so much emotional labor and physical labor. And I honestly do not want to run a business. I do, though, would rather be a solo entrepreneur personally. And so that's something that, like, I would obviously prefer than just, like, being someone that owns the product or owns, like, some form of NGO. That's so much work for me. There's already so much amazing orgs that do that. And so I think for me, I do see myself in the future, though, hoping to either become a professor and educator in institutions, whether it be, like, through public or private, but also to hoping to be more of a public speaker or a consultant that would hopefully be able to implement environmental education design systems within public universities or schools. And so that's something that, like, I've always been considering of, but it's obviously requires a lot of work and, like, connections. And so as a 23-year-old, you know, you're just, like, into this work industry. So you're just learning everything. But also, I do hope that, like, with my own experience of doing research and my past and, like, being in environmental science, I can also apply a lot of that, like, science background into the work I'm doing too.
Yeah, I just love the fact that you are in some ways just, like, always an avid student. Like you said, with school, like, you know, I think we think that once we're done with college or programs, or then we're done learning. But I think you've done such an amazing job of constantly learning and being a student. For our listeners, what is one book that you really recommend for somebody to read?
Yeah, I mean, I've read so many books, I think, but I think, you know, one of the ones recently, actually, I will tell you, is that I'm not really into, like, not that I'm not into or disregard it. Like, I haven't really read that much self-help or spirituality books, you know, like the self-love books. And so I was reading one, and so it was called The Power of Now.
And oh, great.
Yeah, so I think you've heard of this book. Yeah, and so yeah. It kind of talks about, right, like, the way that you position your life, and, like, how as human beings, we're constantly thinking of the future. And it's, like, something that's, like, kind of draining, because you're constantly living for something else that may or may not happen. And so once you reach that goal, like, the book questions to you, like, well, what's your next goal, right? So you create a new future. And so it's things of, like, understanding the now is so important, because the fact that, like, you exist today, like, your feelings, your emotions should be validated that day. Like, don't think so much into the future, and think about what you're doing now is what matters, and see how that will take the stream, right? I think they use this analogy where, like, you're going down a stream, right? And you don't tell the stream which way you're going to go or which way you're going to put yourself to, right? It just takes you along the stream. So you don't know where you'll end up, but I think that with your intentionality and your own feelings, then you will know where you will end up. It's just the fact that, like, letting life get to it. And so I think it also taught me important things of, like, disasters or, like, things that happen, unfortunately. Like, you have to just let it go, even though it hurts or you experience so much like hurt, it will soon pass, obviously. And so I think for me, when I was reading it post-college, I was like, I could have used this so much in college because I was experiencing so many of these things, but like, I didn't know how to like think about it or really process about it. And now later, obviously, like realizing that, I was like, well, that's something I should have done earlier.
Yeah, I'm a huge self-development nut. And I think that I agree that I think it's such an interesting balance of people who are in sustainability, because we're always thinking about the future. You know, we're thinking about our future generations and, you know, the people and the generation that lives after us. And also we think about our ancestry too. Also, you know, I think about my grandparents and, you know, how they came from China and they, you know, worked their way up for it too. And all the things that are so, you know, complex. But I do think, I agree with you that it's so important to live in the now, and that is seen through our daily actions. You know, it's built on step by step. It's the everyday, because that's really what you live. You know, you live in the everyday. You don't live in the future. You don't live in the past. It's these little bricks that you're building towards whatever future you want, but it's like being able to do that in the everyday actions, even though it feels small. Like for you, for example, like you want to be a public speaker, you're doing it right now. You know, I feel like seeing you in social media, like I feel like you're always doing some sort of like presentation or something. I'm like, wow, like you're building those steps towards it and you're creating action towards that. But it's, yeah, I agree. It's seen in the day to day. So I love that book. I'll definitely put that in the description. So what is one method that in business or in self-development that you keep yourself grounded, especially with all the work that you do?
I've always been someone that's like, I understand completely that people are like, you know, people deserve to be paid for their work, right? Or their time. And so that's something that like I value and respect people for. I like for myself, like in other hands, like if I were obviously like, you know, dealing with an institution or like a brand, like trying to like, you know, make me do something for them without pay, then that obviously raises questions where I'm like, you really don't necessarily have like at least $50 or $100 to like pay for this. Like, is that like, is there there's just no budget whatsoever. And so I think with like comes with like people, I'm very like obviously like very open to like do any types of collaborations, because I believe that like also as I'm doing this work that like I want to meet other people. And that was like my goal originally, to connect with other creatives and community members. And so I always say yes to people. I like, you know, I'm like for it. I'm like, yes, I will be on your show. I'll be, let's do this live stream. And so I think that like when you're collaborating with people, it showcases itself and manifests itself with others. And so, you know, more and more, like, you know, with previous podcasts I've done with other folks, like people are like, oh, I heard you on this podcast. Like, I want to know more about you. And so it's like, you know, it's really fun to hear that. And also I think that like the more you collaborate, the more in a sense, like your own message is spread. And so I think that for me, like, or that's obviously not my intention to do, but I think for me, like, you know, if others hear this conversation, I think that just understanding the fact of like in a collective movement, it's about the people, right? And not just I movement, like I'm doing this. And so I think that by connecting with other creatives and people, it really showcases itself in a really like, I guess like business way of like people get to know your name in the industry.
You have such, you know, and even as somebody who reached out to you too, I felt that, you know, you were like, yes, I'm here. Like, let's collaborate. And, but you've done such an amazing job of being very just open to your community. And I think you just do an incredible job of that. But I also appreciate you also saying, you know, especially for people who, brands and large companies who want to collaborate with you, you also have that boundary of, I should get paid for this, you know? And so I think you've created a really great sort of what you say yes to and what you say no to. And okay, so how can somebody connect with you?
Yeah, no, definitely. I feel like with like now like my DMs kind of get more flooded every day. So I'm like, so it's so hard sometimes to like respond back to people. But I think I always tell them to email me at queerboundvegan@gmail.com, only because like emails are better for me to respond because they're saved on there. With DMs, they can be lost. And so I have a website, right? And so like my website kind of lists more about like, cause a lot of people always ask like, oh, well, I want to know more about your story. So I have a little story about, who I was and stuff like that on my website. But I tell people to connect with me on like Twitter, like Instagram, TikTok, like LinkedIn. I listed my LinkedIn on there. And so it's things that, like, you know, if you're looking for a business connection and learning, wanting to learn more about sustainable communities or slash the sustainable sector work field, I'm someone that's like obviously too a professional too, right? I'm not in college anymore. So obviously like I'm focused too on developing my career. And so I always welcome people wherever they may be or wherever they're at. And so that's something that like I always have like, I think, an open door policy for now anyways, until, you know, in the future. But I think I have an open door where people can come and talk to me if they need to.
Hey, Kpreneurs, thanks for tuning in. If you've enjoyed this episode, come on over and join me at The Kpreneur Show. I'd love to hear your story and what positive impacts you're making in the world. Anyways, hope you're having an awesome day, and I'll see you in the next episode.